WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Carson Kill. I'm repeating myself. Let's get to my other two co-hosts with me. So, welcome, Luke.
Luke Torrey.
Adam Baranofsky.
We have a lot to talk about. A lot happening this episode. Luke, what do we have coming up in the last segment?
We have a senior contributor with MLB Media, and a former beat reporter for the New York Yankees on WFAN, Sweeney Murdy, will be joining us for a phone call around 7:35 p.m.
Yes. So if we got a couple of Yankees fans in the house, so yep. I think they're Sweet. Very excited for
Sweeney
this.
Sweeney's a good guy. I've known him for a while. He's close to my dad, so I'm excited to have him on today.
Well, speaking of teams that are extremely well-liked, can we talk about Alabama baseball?
I mean, I don't think we're getting the respect we deserve. We haven't moved one in the rankings. I know we've played nobody, but we're
9-0.
9-0, 17-3 in the last game. Didn't we start last year like 9-0?
Yeah,
and then we just like slowly just declining.
That's why I'm not like fully declining. Like this team is very, very good. Like I was the same way with like the Alabama basketball team. I'm like, let's see, like let us play like a Houston. Let us play like a That's why I'm all in on like the Alabama basketball team because they. Proved it all year they against tough competition too, but Alabama baseball, like, yeah, they're good. I'm not saying they're not good. They're a good team. I just don't know if they're the best team in the SEC. I don't know. I need to see more. Like, you're going to play these, like, small schools, and it's like, okay, you're going to win, but, like, I just need to see them play somebody tougher and win those games.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair criticism, especially when people are like, oh, we're undefeated, you know, where aren't we number one or number five at least, you know? It's like, We need to play some bigger schools. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly like we're helping our case this weekend because we are playing UIC.
What is that?
What is University of...
Iowa or Illinois?
Illinois Central? I don't know. I'm guessing.
Hang on.
UIC. California. Yeah.
Can they say where they're... I'm looking at their team website right now. I legitimately cannot figure out where this team
is
from.
Look it up on Google.
Okay, I think it's Illinois. The way.
University of Illinois, Chicago.
Yeah, okay. Oh, so,
it's a
again,
public four-year.
Yeah, like, again,
oh boy.
It took us that long to figure out where this game is from.
If we don't win by 35, it's a disappointment.
Speaking of winning, let's talk about a couple of games this past weekend. Again, High Point swept that series. Like,
yeah, I mean, game two, we were down 6-0 in the, I believe it was the fourth inning when we scored 7 unanswered on 2 outs.
Even on Sunday, it was close. It was 4-2.
Yeah.
High Point's probably not a bad team.
Yeah. And then, you know, they did keep it close. And then let's talk about last night's game.
Yeah, that was
just an entourage of offensive
dinger
explosion.
After dinger after
I loved
dinger
it.
After
I loved
dinger.
It. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. I mean, again, a lot to kind of look at from that perspective. I think it's very fair that we look at this team and we say, you know, at least, again, if the momentum keeps up the way it is, after spring break when we finally start getting some SEC play, could this be like – one of the teams that could finally kind of break through that barrier compared to, like, last year's team?
I don't see why not. I mean, I think we're better than we are last year. When we had a lot of returning players. There wasn't that guy last year that you'd be like, he's our guy. Like, and I think Pickney, and we have a couple of them this year with Pickney, Drew Williamson, Jim Jarvis. Like, we have a really good roster defensively too. Jim Jarvis made
a lot of good plays over the weekend.
I like it, honestly. I like our chances to go far.
So let's kind of start looking for it again. University of Illinois in Chicago, a school we literally just had to look up to see if it was real. Again, 3-game series this weekend, and finally the team has their first game. It's not too far, though, from Tuscaloosa. It's in Birmingham against Samford. I guess thoughts on those two upcoming teams that we'll be playing before the next show?
I think we should win those games by a good amount, just my personal opinion, because we're a lot better than them, in my opinion, also. So that's pretty much it. But, yeah, what do you have, Luke?
I It's hard to not be biased, but I think we got it.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm looking forward to me personally. The Alabama baseball season starts when they play the SEC.
Yes, I agree.
When they start,
we play Florida March 14th, right?
I think so. Yes,
around there.
March 16th is the first SEC.
Open up against the Florida. Florida's good. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah. That is when we get it.
Vandy too. Vandy's very good.
And that's at Florida.
That's it. Yeah.
So if we could get one there, I'd be happy with it. Honestly,
if my main thing is, I just feel like college, like. In all college sports, conference play matters the most.
Yes, baseball.
Especially in baseball.
And look how good the SEC is.
Yeah.
Like, you look around the SEC, you got South Carolina, top 25
team. It's not like football. Where
Alabama,
like
top 25 team. Vanderbilt, always at the top.
Yeah.
Tennessee, always at the top.
LSU,
always at the top. Yeah. Florida, always at the top. The SEC is stacked in baseball.
Yeah, it's not like football.
It always has been and always will be.
Yeah, it's not like basketball where there's like four good teams and then like football where
Ole Miss, very good. Mississippi State, very good. Like every
Arkansas.
I think almost every SEC school is a quad one team.
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna check that later, but I honestly, if I had to guess, I would say like definitely majority, like 90% of the SEC, I think would be a quad top 70.
Yeah, that's why in baseball, especially the SEC matters the most, because in different sports, like the SEC is not as good as it is in baseball. Like in baseball, it's kind of like the ACC of basketball, like in like the 2010-11s, where the ACC just ran the sport. That's kind of how it is, and I think that the SEC kind of runs baseball also. So yeah, that's just to me the season starts when they play the first game in Florida. That's when it starts to me.
I agree. I agree with that.
So, I guess with that, again undefeated in baseball. Let's talk about softball, Adam.
Before we go into that, I'm just gonna count the SEC teams in the top 25 alone.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got LSU, Tennessee, Ole Miss. Those are all in the top four.
Wow.
Florida 6, Vanderbilt 7, Arkansas 8.
Jeez Louise.
That's 1, 2, 3.
That's half the top 10.
Yeah.
That's half the
4,
top
5, 6. 6 60, in the top 10.
60% of the top 10.
60%
wow.
of the top 10's SEC. And then you go back, you got A&M 15.
Wow. What are we?
We're 20.
We're 20.
Us at 20.
Yeah.
South Carolina at 23.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. I think 10 top 25 teams.
And how many SEC teams are there? Like 14?
12 or 14.
Yeah, that's
have
ridiculous.
To check. But 10 in the top utter, 25 is unbelievable.
That never happens in football.
Yeah.
Football, you'll have like four SEC teams in the top like 25, which is ridiculous. But
SEC is it's 16 teams. The only teams out of the top 25 are Missouri, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Texas, Georgia, and Oklahoma.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
And those teams, I would imagine, are
better than a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
So, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, that's why, like, to me personally, baseball season, it's like strange, but in a good way, because conference play matters a lot more, because the conference teams are a lot better than any other sport.
So I got the top 100 here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking outside the top 25. I think this might be last year. Or no, it's.
Uh oh.
Here we go. I got it. So, I mean, it's Auburn is right outside the top 25. It's just crazy. Georgia's 35.
Wow.
So they're up there.
So is everybody in the top 50?
Kentucky's 58.
Okay. I mean, that's still very good considering how many baseball teams are in the country.
Yeah. And then, so Missouri, I think, is the only team not in the top 100.
Wow.
Which
ridiculous.
Is unbelievable. Yeah. There's 16 teams. That's like almost 20% of the entire top 100 is SEC teams.
That's why conference play matters most in baseball.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tell people this, but
I mean, they say that baseball in the South is just different, and it is. I'll tell you. But, like, it's just crazy to me that 15 of 16. Almost 100% of the entire SEC is in the top 100.
And 60 is in the top 10.
Yeah, there's 6 in the top 10, 10 in the top 25, which is just unbelievable. But, yeah, let's talk softball now.
Yeah, all right. So, softball, they actually are playing right now.
Yeah, they're up 1-0 last time I checked. Yeah.
But let's talk about this weekend, and then we'll lead into Sunday.
Yes. So, I covered the two games on Saturday. Overall, pretty good showing. I thought they played really well. Mm-hmm. They won. They scored their season high in runs, which was awesome to see. It was Faith Hensley Day, so shout out to her. She killed it both games. Shout out to you, Faith. You did great. But yeah, so it was her senior day. It was a nice sight to watch. Her parents were there. She hit two dingers. It was awesome. Yeah, they played well. I really enjoy covering softball all the time. Yeah, that's pretty much what I had to say. I think Murph picked up, I think, a historic win. I'm pretty sure he said something about it. Yeah, I think his 6,000th win or something?
No, 1,200.
1,200. Right. 1,200, yeah, my bad. Not 6,000, what am I saying?
That would 12, have been 12, unbelievable.
12, yeah. No, 1,200, my bad. Yeah, 1,220. Yeah, he was talking about that. Yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Sunday was a little bit... What happened Sunday, you could elaborate more on it, Carson, but I think they were just tired, because when you play back-to-back games and you got to play less than 24 hours after that, that's not easy to do. So yeah, you covered that game. You elaborate more on
it. Yeah, so that was a fall-apart game. It was a meltdown. Yeah. Like, basically, Kennesaw State was in it the entire time, and Alabama was just – it was like, okay, our pitching's going to be okay. Offense is going to suck. Offense is going to be great. Pitching's going to suck.
Yeah. My biggest concern kind of is who's going to pitch? Who's that, like, solid number two option outside of Montana? Because
I literally have a quote from Murphy, like, after the game when we're doing the little roundabout conference saying, okay, you know, what happened? He said, we can't rely on Montana fouls all the
time.
He's
right. He's absolutely right. Yeah, like, because Montana comes in, she pitches – I'll tell you right now what her stats were. I remember it was – she comes in the game against Southeastern Louisiana. She comes in. She goes – I think she pitches almost the entire game. Her final stats were – I'll tell you right now. 4 innings. The game ended after 5. 4 innings, 9 strikeouts, 5 hits. She was absolutely dominant. She pitched four out of 5 innings. And – She looked like she wasn't slowing down. But, like, the other game, Alex Salter, she looked a little rusty. The runs helped her out, but she did not look too great. And, I just think that softball, they need to find their solid, like, solidified number two option behind Montana, because I don't think they have that currently.
Yeah, it feels like they're just kind of stuck in a loop of or rely on fouls and then hopefully defense is offense is
high. Yeah, and like rely on Allie Shipman's like hitting and then Dowling's home run hitting. Just like their offense is very good. Their offense is not a problem at all, because they could pour in runs very, very quickly at a very, very quick rate. I'm just a little concerned about their pitching more than I am their offense, to me. But yeah, I'm also covering both games on Friday against tell y'all right now against Robert Morris and Longwood. So they're both in at Rhodes Stadium in Tuscaloosa. The Robert Morris at 4:00 Central Time, and then Longwood is at 6:30. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But then they play the same schools again on Saturday
and Sunday
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is the last in Tuscaloosa tournament they're a part of.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yes.
Yeah, I think SEC play for them starts, I'll tell you right now. Well, Texas is SEC, right? Is Texas SEC?
No, not right now.
No, okay. So SEC play for them starts at Arkansas March 18th.
Yeah.
Allie Shipman Day. It's in Tuscaloosa. It's Allie Shipman Day.
Yeah. So not too bad. Of course, there's a couple other schools that'll be coming in during the SEC play time.
And
but
it's right
I can't
after,
wait. Just it's both right baseball and break, softball. Yeah. I just need SEC play to start. It makes everything so much more like enjoyable, entertaining, and just it means so much more.
All right. Well, just like you said, with the SEC, it just means more. We'll be back with more right after the break. Talk about spring training, some fun shenanigans, and more. So, quick 5-minute break. We'll be right back.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Student Section MLB. I'm, of course, your host, Carson Keel.
Luke Torrey.
Adam Baranowski.
And let's talk about some spring training. So, what do you guys want to start off first?
I mean,
the game ending and a pitch clock violation.
That was funny. That was unreal.
The game that ended with no umps.
Oh my God, that was hilarious too.
Or something else.
Spring training.
Before we get into like the two main games, I was laughing so hard at this. Carlos Correa fouled the ball off, and he started just like wandering around, walking around just to reset, and he forgot, and he sprinted right back into the box and just looked back at the pitcher to get ready. Because for those who don't know, not only is there a pitch clock, but for the hitters, they have to be set before 8 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I actually didn't know that. Yeah
so it's just really funny seeing these guys adjust to it.
Didn't they rule it a tie? They ruled it a tie. Like, I'm pretty sure when the batter, like the clock ran, I'm pretty sure the game was tied and they ruled it a tie. And
yeah.
They did, right?
Of course, that's spring training.
Yeah,
but
I mean, yeah. It was funny.
It's so funny.
I mean, that might be the first time in baseball history.
I mean, well, there's been ties in spring training before, but like not like pitch clock violation.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, along those, yeah.
Yeah, this is a very interesting kind of first week into spring training. Again, I mean, the whole Braves-Boston ending, that was just hilarious. As a Braves fan, again, spring training, so I don't get super upset, but it's like, it was bases loaded, and it ends on
bases loaded, two out.
Three balls,
a 3-2 count.
Like, let's let him.
I saw it was
pitch.
A tweet from Jeff Passan that made me laugh.
Yeah,
like that's what I found out about the whole situation. Let me pull this up. So Jeff Passan put out a tweet. It's like every kid's dream: bases loaded, two out, bottom nine. Yeah, bottom of the ninth, tie game, bases loaded, full count, the dream scenario, and Cal Conley didn't get set in the batter's box with 8 seconds left on the pitch clock. Umpire calls an automatic strike, at bat over, inning over. This is the new reality.
So, I love Jeff Passan.
It was just so funny to me that it's like these are big adjustments, and it's good that these players are going to have some time to make those adjustments. I mentioned earlier, and we're going to talk about later when Sweeney comes on with us, I think – like, these guys that are playing in the World Baseball Classic are playing with the old rules. So they're going to start the regular season not having any experience with this, and I think that's something to look out for.
And also, if you guys didn't see, Seiya Suzuki opted out of the World Baseball Classic.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I think it was Seiya Suzuki or Kode Singh. I don't remember. I think it was Seiya Suzuki, though. I'm pretty sure. But yeah, I personally love it, the new rule. I love it. It's going to move the game a million times faster. You can actually sit and watch a full game of baseball now and not just say, all right, like, when's this guy going to hit? Or, like, the game's going to go faster. It's not going to take 3.5 hours to finish a game.
Yeah,
I love it.
Let's talk about that because they literally showed how it was a faster game.
Yes.
And they literally showed how in one inning, like, they literally, like had all the pitches during the span of one pitch with the old rules.
Yes, and it's fantastic because it's good. Everybody likes – nobody wants to sit in front of their TV and watch a game that's going to be 3.5 hours long.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to do that.
Exactly.
I don't want to do that. My dad doesn't want to do that. Everyone I know that's a baseball fan does not want to do that. If you – those clocks are also going to – I think that's going to – I agree with Luke. I think that's going to advance hitting because I think pitchers are going to rush pitches and they're going to want – they're going to
start being wild.
Yeah, they're going to start being wild, throw a lot of wild pitches. Yep. I think that we could see a record wild pitches thrown because they'd be like, all right, I got to beat this clock. I got to beat this clock. I got to beat this clock because they're not used to it.
It does.
These type of adjustments take like a year to get adjusted to. Like you can't just say in one offseason, oh, I'm gonna start practicing with the clock.
Yeah.
Because no, like you can't. It's impossible to
adjust.
It's
a very good point. And another point to talk about is like players have their like I guess you could say like their rhythm, their
yeah.
I don't know what word I'm looking for, but like
routine.
Yeah, their routine. So you foul a ball off, you readjust your batting gloves, you walk around. Like I did it in high school. Everybody has their little thing that they do, and getting rid of that could throw hitters' timing off.
Yeah.
So honestly, it goes both ways. It just overall, moral of the story, is going to take a while to get used to, and I would not be surprised if players' batting averages did not get off to such a hot start to start the regular season, and if pitchers' whips were very high to start the season. I think those are the two things that are going to be the most, like the biggest jump, and but again with batting averages, players who benefit from shift ban, we'll get to that later. There's a lot of changes, like these changes. It doesn't seem like a lot. These are major changes in the sport. It goes way past just speeding games up. There's a lot of adjustments that need to be made for that, for shift ban, and for the enlarged bases. There's a lot that happened this offseason. I'm excited to see this coming season.
I'm extremely excited because I'm a new school guy. Luke knows. I love the new players. I love the new just everything. Like everything young and fresh and just the new rules. It's awesome. It's going to be great. I think the way the season is going to start is there's either going to be 14 to like 11 games or like 2-1 games.
Right.
That's it's going to go either way because hitters aren't going to be used to it, and then there's going to be swinging at wild pitches or I don't know. But I don't think there's any in between. I don't think it's going to be like 6-5. I think it's going to be either double digits or very low single digit scoring. That's the way I see it.
I'm very interested in that. Again, talking about the shift ban, right. I think that's actually going to help a lot of players and could help scoring.
Yes.
Yeah. Even when you don't hit. Yeah.
Guys like Anthony Rizzo, Joey Gallo.
Olson is the biggest.
Matt Olson and Anthony Rizzo. I feel like are the two highlight guys that are going to benefit from this. I said earlier when the second semester started and we picked this back up, I think guys like Anthony Rizzo, Matt Olson, you're going to see guys like that. Guys who don't really hit for very high average, they're going to hit like 330
now,
this year.
Decently high average. It's average.
Rizzo finished last year batting around 252, I think.
I think it was like 2-2 something.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, it was very low. I was surprised.
I could see Rizzo being around 300 this year.
I hope so. That'd be awesome.
And if he keeps up with, he had his career high in home runs last year.
Yeah. No, he's really good, Anthony Rizzo. I love him.
So, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are going to benefit from this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think shift ban kills the guys who don't, like DJ LeMahieu. I don't think it really affects him as much as it would affect guys who pull the ball.
Yeah.
The time.
Do you think it could prevent stealing?
Like
lesser stolen bases? I think so, too.
I would say yes, but now with the bigger bases, I think you're going to see a lot of other bases.
That's what I was thinking, too. So
I think Manfred, if he is behind the rule changes,
love it. Yeah.
I love it. This is the first thing that Manfred has done that I agree with.
Yes, absolutely.
No shade, Rob Manfred. I'll shade Rob Manfred.
Totally.
Like, good job. I'll give you your credit where credit is due, but like... shade is being thrown on the low. but I'm super excited. Give me Yankees baseball. Give me any baseball. I'm just so pumped to get back into it. I love that it's starting right after March Madness.
Yeah,
just,
that's great.
It's just like one sport ends, the other sport begins.
Yeah,
I'm just so pumped.
Yeah.
It's a great time of year. You know, we got March Madness, NFL draft, baseball starts, and then we're in summer. What a great time of year, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice that we're kind of we're going forward. Things are happening. It's warming up.
Yep. This is the best time of year every year, without a doubt.
I agree.
You know, my birthday's in April. It's just what a time to be alive, man.
So, I guess let's talk about, again, the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game.
Right.
Ends with no umpires because...
I liked it. So, yeah, the umpires left after 7, right?
No, after the top of the 9th.
Okay, so it's top of the 9th, and they wanted to just, you know, at spring training, get the guys at bats, you know? So, bottom 9, obviously, the game should be over because the score was in the home team's favor. In that scenario, it was the Pirates, right? Were they home?
No, it was Baltimore.
Baltimore. Okay, so Baltimore's home. They had won the game, but, you know, just like we used to do that in high school, or like split squad scrimmages, whatever it was. Games that didn't count. I liked it that they wanted to do it. I think the umpires should have stayed. I don't know if they left because they didn't know that was going to happen, but whatever it was, I love extra free baseball, you know. It's good for the younger guys to get experience at that level if they're not getting as many at-bats. I liked it. Why not? It's just some live at-bats to see. That's all it was.
Keep things going.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always one of those things where you're like, you know, it's always funny just when that happens. Because, again, Pittsburgh actually was batting, and they were winning the game.
Okay.
So it's... You know, they just want to keep playing. In a real game, everyone's off the field.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah. I've been. What was the question again that you asked? I don't remember.
Just kind of your thoughts on the whole no umps ending.
Oh, that was interesting. I mean, I will gladly play with no umps. I'm not the biggest umpire supporter.
You're ready for those robo umps?
Yes, I am extremely because robots.
I'm pumped for that, man.
Yes, because
I think we talked about that with Jason Dominguez.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
That is such a good. I'm so pumped for that. That rule change will make me feel some type of way about Rob Manfred.
Because, like, electronics, like, they see things differently than humans do. Like, human eyes are going to tell you only so much, but robots are going to, like, scan where the strike zone is. Like, it's just, like, we're so tech advanced in this century that I don't even know why robot umps weren't allowed, like, 3 years ago. These umpires are, no offense to baseball, they're garbage. They're hot garbage, these umpires. All of them. Every single one of them, from Angel or down.
There's some good umpires.
No, I personally don't think there's a single good umpire.
I think there's some good umpires. Every umpire makes mistakes, but I follow this account on Twitter, Umpire Scorecards, and there's they put out like scorecards for the umpire like after every game, no matter what game it is, and you see guys like CB Buckner, Angel Hernandez missing like 11% of the calls, and that is just unbelievable.
Like I just think that the Yankees specifically too are like always given the worst umpires. And it's just like, to me, when a ball is at your knees, no matter how tall you are, it's a ball every time. Like, it's literally a ball every time. But no, like, they're going to call it a strike. Anyway, that's another discussion for another day. But yeah, that's just the way I see it. I don't think there should be umpires at all. So I was pleased to see that. They should not be on the field at all. I let them go watch it from their house. I'm a big robot umps guy. I just think that they're going to get the game better. But yeah.
Yeah. I guess, is there any other little things with spring training? Again, we talked about no shift, pitch clock. Ending kind of games with no umpires. Anything else you guys have seen from spring training that you guys just...
I want to talk about a reason that I have moved my thoughts more towards what Adam is on.
Let's go.
About not playing guys in the... a lot in spring training. It's good to get guys at bats, but a perfect example with Gavin Lux. You got to feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
Gavin Lux was looking great in the offseason and stuff, and he just comes out and
he was
tears
start
his
too.
ACL.
He was about to replace Trey Turner, too.
You just got to feel bad
big
for
loss,
the guy. Yeah, it really is sad. We could touch up on that like later after Sweeney joins us, but I think we're headed to a break soon, right?
Yep. So, real quick, again, Sweeney will be joining us. Luke, go and give us a little rundown of what we can expect.
So we're going to talk, obviously, new rules with him, get his input on everything. We're going to talk like the impact it's going to have on players, coaches, teams, on each one of them. And then we're going to talk about some miscellaneous stuff with the Yankees, where he formerly worked, and other teams around the league. So you can expect that right after the break.
Yes. So quick 5-minute break, and then we'll be right back with our guests. Stay tuned, everybody.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Student Section OB. We are excited. We have a guest with us. But, of course, first, I'm Carson Keel.
Luke Torrey.
Adam Baranofsky.
And we welcome Sweeney Murty to the show. Sweeney, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Sweeney, I just want to say congrats on your new position with MLB. I'm excited to see what you got going on over there. Been a fan of yours for a while with the Yankees. Let's just kick it off. So I want to talk first about the new additions with the rules, the rule changes. So the pitch clock, to start it off, what do you think kind of impact the pitch clock is going to make?
Well, I think you're already seeing a big part of it in spring training. I mean, the games on average have dropped about 20 minutes from last spring training. And, I think a lot of people who are critical of it are just looking at some of the instances when the umpire has to call the strike or the ball because the guys aren't ready. But those are, that's kind of what spring training is for. And I think you're not seeing a very large amount of them. I think on average there's less than one per team per game. If you look at all the spring training games, and that's in the first week that they're adapting to it. So let this go on a few more weeks and get ready for the season. I think you're going to see everybody adjust to it very well. And all you're doing, all you're doing is cutting down a lot of dead time. I mean, people say you don't want less baseball. Well, you're not getting less baseball. You're still getting 9 innings. You're still getting 27 outs aside. And the offense is actually going up so far in the first small sample size. Mm-hmm. So you're getting more action in less time, which was the goal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And Do you think there's a level of concern for the players participating in the World Baseball Classic with them playing with the old rules, not having a chance to try out like the new rules?
Yeah, maybe, but I think, you know, they're already getting a little bit of it here, a little taste of it here, and then you're going to see, you know, I wonder how it's, what it's like for some of the other countries too, and like what their players are doing. Because remember, if you have players in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. Here, you know, they've been playing under those rules for a little while. So, I mean, they're not all major leaguers playing on all these teams. So mm-hmm. I think you'll probably have a little bit of concern, but overall, I think they're getting some practice time in with it now. They're going to get some time in with it before the end of spring training. And like I said, it's not like it's being sprung on them. You know, I think all you're missing is some of the practical time. It's not like they came to spring training and all of a sudden somebody told them these were the rules. Like they've known that this was happening.
Right.
And you know, I heard an interesting thing on the Yankees broadcast earlier was that, you know, Aaron Boone told his team from the beginning, you know, I don't want to hear you guys complaining about it. Mm-hmm. These are rules. Complaining about it isn't going to change anything. You have to deal with it. This is your reality. So, you know, I think if everybody takes that sort of mentality, then it shouldn't be that big of an adjustment.
Right. Mm.
Sweeney, I guess let's talk about, of course, new rules. You have the shift ban basically in place now. I guess besides someone like a Matt Olson, who, as a Braves fan, I know is going to, you know, have an amazing year because of that. What are other teams, players that you think we're going to see kind of a big kind of offensive change now that that kind of rule is in place?
Yeah, I think mostly it's just, you know, I don't know if it benefits specific players. I mean, surely you're going to talk about the left-handed hitters who are seeing the shift and, you know, those little line drives in short right field where the second baseman was standing. Those are now hits. I think if you watch some of the infields, you know, you'll see the shortstop is pretty much right at second base, just maybe a step over. And so he's not lined up on the other side, but he's pretty close. And you can see a, you know, guy kind of shifting in motion as just after the pitch is thrown. You see a little bit of that too. So I think, though, that really you're just creating a little bit more separation for the infielders, and that's where balls get through in the middle. You know, I mean, you think about, and I just gave you an example of the shortstop is pretty much up the middle, but I think you're seeing some examples where that's not the case, and those balls up the middle are, you know, they used to just be base hits back in the day, and now you're seeing at least the ability. I think one thing you're going to find is you're going to see second baseman and shortstops have to make diving plays or athletic plays a little bit more often, mm-hmm. and that can be just as fun and just as exciting to watch too. I don't think this is strictly about the benefit of the hitter, the left-handed hitter, seeing more hits fall in. I think it's about seeing more athletic plays in the field.
Right.
Hey, Sweeney, thank you for joining us. So, as you know, the bases were enlarged. That was also a new rule this offseason. How big of a change do you think this is, and does it affect catchers or runners more?
Well, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, think about how many times you've seen a stolen base, and you have to look at the replay to see if he's safe or out. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's a game of inches right there. Well, now you're giving a few inches back to the base runner. It's a huge advantage for the runner. You know, the catcher isn't gaining any sort of an advantage there. All you're doing really is you're changing the math equation, which stolen bases have kind of become. Stolen bases were simply a matter of, okay, we know how fast it takes this runner to get from first to second. We know how fast it takes the pitcher to deliver the ball. We know how fast it takes for the catcher to throw to second base. If those times add up in the favor of the runner, and the runner can make it, say, 80% of the time, then you have a chance to get a stolen base. Well, I mean, that's all kind of boring, isn't it? I mean, now you're seeing the distance cut down. You're you're swaying some of that momentum towards the runner, and you're giving a player like that a more of an incentive to run, a more of a chance to run. And I think what it does is it also brings back those athletic kinds of players back into the game. If the stolen base becomes a bigger part of the game, then the players who can steal bases become more valuable assets on your roster. And I think you were seeing those guys kind of disappear over the years. So I don't think it's a necessarily a short-term fix. I think if you look at what the game becomes, say, 3, 4, 5 years from now, and maybe the kinds of players who are coming into the game, being drafted into the game and making it through the minors, then I think you see a little bit more of an impact as this goes on.
Yeah. All right, now I want to shift towards specifically Yankees. Obviously, you've got your fair share of insight on that. What can we realistically expect for an encore season from Aaron Judge?
Well, I don't think you can expect him to hit 70 this year. Mm-hmm. it'd be kind of nice to see.
Yeah.
You know, realistically, he could hit 40 home runs and still be a very successful season, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could still hit 38 home runs and still be a successful season. I think, mm-hmm. I think about it this way. Who was it the other night that scored 71?
It was Damian Lillard.
So has he played again since?
Yeah, he did. He played last night against the Warriors and scored
and
about.
How many did he score?
I think he finished with 29 or 30. It was like the lowest amount of points he scored in like 25 games, which is unbelievable.
Okay. But like 29 or 30 is still a really good night.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess my point is if you have a season like that, mm-hmm. a career like that, a year like that, it's just, you can still have a pretty significant drop-off and still have a really good year. Everything has to go right for a player to have a year like that. And I think that, just the simple logic, a pitcher throws a no-hitter. If he goes out and throws, six innings of two-run ball the next time out, you're still pretty happy with the effort, I think you just have to understand that a lot of things go right. And it's just one of those magical seasons. It took 61 years for somebody to do that in the American League. I don't think we expect it to happen back-to-back years. So, temper the expectations a little bit and understand that think about how many people have hit 50 homers in a season three times in their career.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very long list, and he's done it twice already.
Yeah.
So I think you have to just understand that, a lot of things go right, and maybe they will again, but it's probably best to temper your expectations a little.
Right.
This is a question I think that a lot of Yankee fans want to know the answer to, and I'd like to hear your opinion as well. Who do you think starts at shortstop for the Yankees?
I think Oswald Peraza has probably been the guy that, you look like it's his job to lose pretty much all winter. I think you have to wait to see how the spring plays out. Injuries can be a factor here too. But I think you're kind of looking, he's the guy that is a little bit ahead of Anthony Volpe just because of the development chain. He's played higher on the minor league level. And he's, touched the big leagues. So you look at him as having a little bit more of an edge there. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa just didn't perform well enough to have any sort of a foothold on that job heading into the year. So I don't think you look at the incumbent having any sort of an edge there. So I would give an edge to Peraza and kind of see how the next 4 weeks play out.
Right.
I'm just to give you an idea, I am the lone non-Yankees fan in this video. it's very interesting sometimes. So I have to ask, what are your thoughts on kind of the expectations of Josh Donaldson? And again, like I said before, I'm a Braves fan. This is, of course, 1 year in 2019. Now that we're entering kind of the end of his four-year contract, what can we see from him this year? And could we see him possibly get traded? I know that's a question that's been kind of bounced around.
I mean, I think it would take a lot for him to get traded simply because there's a lot of money on the table. And, for him to get traded at this point, he would have to perform well enough for somebody to want to take him on at that salary. And if he's performing well enough for somebody to want to do that, isn't he helping the Yankees at that point? You know, and do they have another option? What is the injury status of other players? Are they able to fill that hole if they do trade him? And have enough depth on the rest of their roster? It's a multi-layered thing always. There are many levels to just saying get rid of this guy or keep this guy. And right now, the important thing is to see if Josh Donaldson can still play at a better level than he did a year ago. Because last year, a lot of his peripheral numbers came down and were not nearly as good as they were the previous couple of years, whether it was with Atlanta or with Minnesota. I think you saw a guy who was still a pretty good player in those uniforms. And last year, it just came down. Everything was... He looked like an older player. And for a player who has the history that he does, you kind of tend to give him a little benefit of the doubt for a while and say, okay, maybe it's just going to take him a little while to get going. And as the season wore on, it just never got there. He's earned a little bit of that to be able to, wait it out and see if it starts to click after 100 at-bats, 200 at-bats. But it just never did. Mm-hmm. So he's got to... I don't know what his true desires are after this season. Maybe he wants to keep playing, and maybe that opportunity isn't there for him. But if he wants to keep playing, obviously he's got to perform better than he did a year ago. And I don't know if spring training is going to tell me a whole lot. I think you really kind of have to. Spring training will only tell me if he's healthy enough, and it'll tell you if the Yankees are fortunate enough not to have any other injuries. Then they're going to have decisions to make as to who gets the playing time. So. In that regard, I guess you do kind of have to look a little bit at spring training, but for veteran players like that, it's really hard to make anything out of the numbers they put up. You kind of have to see what shakes out when you get there. You still have 4 weeks, and a lot can happen in 4 weeks.
Right, and he was obviously not great from the plate, but he was a great defender last year. Honestly, if he picks it up just a little bit, I think that'd be great for the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly where he's earning his money, right? Mm-hmm. Is with the bat. And, he didn't slow down defensively. He made, he really did make an impact there. He's getting paid the kind of money he's getting paid because of the type of offensive impact he can make, and that just wasn't there.
All right, and now to wrap up the Yankees talk, what do you think the biggest concern is for the Yankees, and is there a way around it at the trade deadline?
The biggest concern, I think you just kind of have to look at the one of the things for me is that because they traded away a lot of pitching depth in the previous two trade deadlines to get better, they've lost a little bit of that. Now, you've got a couple other kids come up that have been added to the 40-man that are kind of that next level, but they really did dip into that the pitching depth to acquire players like Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo the last few years, the trade where they made with Oakland with Lou Trevino. So those are things that Montas. Those are things that you're always kind of worry about, if more injuries pop up there, that's something you just kind of have to figure out how to address. The outfield situation, I guess you got to see if you can truly find a left fielder. Although if you have one position that's not, giving you the best production, if everybody else is, I think you can kind of deal with that until you have better options show up. And they found that last year when they made the deal for Andrew Benintendi in July. So you're going to be able to figure that part out as the season gets going. Any other real concern is, are they going to be better than Houston? They're going to have to run through Houston again and figure out if they're better, and everything kind of has to be there. They suffered some key injuries in key spots last year, and they just weren't the same team come October as they were earlier in the year, and that's really was their biggest flaw, is that they were not the same team at the end of the year. Just, physically they could not be the same team, regardless of whether or not they were going to be. It's hard to tell if they were going to be as good as the Astros, because the team they put on the field against the Astros was not the team they wanted to put on the field against the Astros, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yes. So speaking of the Astros, we all know that they're their team to beat. So what do you think the Astros' biggest flaw is?
Well, you know, they've taken, a little bit of hit to their rotation, not having Verlander back there right away, but obviously pitching was not an issue for them, and it was not a problem for them. They seem to have plenty of that. I think really maybe just the idea that repeating is hard. Nobody has repeated in your lifetimes, nobody has repeated as World Series champions, right? It's been that long. It's hard to do. There are a lot of factors that go into it. And while the Astros have been successful enough to get to the playoffs and to the League Championship Series multiple times, winning it all has, has presented a challenge more than once. So I would think that's probably just their biggest challenge, is that it's just incredibly hard to do back-to-back years.
Right. And now I want your thoughts on a dark horse team in both sides of the league, AL and NL. Can you provide that for us?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I have looked at it enough to say like who I would consider a true dark horse team. I mean, I guess you kind of have to like what Seattle did last year just to get into the playoffs and see what an extra year of maturity is there. In Toronto too, in the American League, because the line isn't always straight up, and this might lean more towards Toronto than Seattle with that argument, because you don't always just get to go one step higher on the ladder. Sometimes you got to, you stay steady, or injuries happen, you take a step back. Those kinds of things happen to teams along the way. So, those are two teams in the American League where you kind of look at and say, okay, I wonder where they're going to go. National League, I mean, this is really not dark horse, I would say, but, the Mets and the Padres had disappointments last year because they didn't reach the World Series. So you kind of want to see if they push through and make it to the next level, because they got knocked off by a hot Phillies team. And, I mean, the Mets got knocked off before that, but you want to see if all the promise you have, it ends kind of abruptly for them. So you want to see them, see if they can get themselves back in position to do that again.
Right.
So I guess my final question, you talked about the Mets. Who's the team to beat in the NL East? Because I think there's about three teams. You got the Phillies, you got the Braves, and you got the Mets, I'm afraid to say. But I guess, is there any other teams besides those three that you could look at as the best?
I mean, in the East, no. I mean, listen, Miami and Washington just aren't capable yet, right? They're just not there yet. I don't know yet. I think, it's going to be the team probably that stays the healthiest. I mean, that was probably part of the problem why why the Mets weren't able to hold on late in the year, and the Braves were able to catch them. I guess I don't know if healthy mattered so much in the playoffs. The Phillies were, and that was probably a part of the reason why they weren't able to keep pace with the other two teams during the regular season. So, I mean, I hate to keep relying on that, but I mean, it's really such a key factor. You had a Phillies team that was kind of reaching its peak with a healthy Bryce Harper back in the lineup. We got done talking about the Yankees, who were missing some key pieces from their lineup, and they just weren't the same. It really is kind of two different seasons, and you can't really fast forward to October. You just kind of have to let the season play out.
Right. And Sweeney, final question here. Where do you think Shohei ends up next year?
Oh, no idea yet. I kind of like to see the kind of season he had. I kind of like to enjoy. I don't want to worry about that yet. That's all business, and that's stuff that we kind of wait to see what happens. Like, you have a player as magical to watch, Shohei Ohtani. Don't we want to just enjoy watching him for a year before we start to figure out where he's going to play next? Let's go see what he's going to do and have that kind of fun first.
Yeah. All right, Sweeney, as always, appreciate your time. Thank you for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
I'm really, like I said earlier, stoked to see what you have coming with MLB, and I'll definitely stay in touch soon. I appreciate it.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Good luck to you all, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Once again, a giant thank you for Sweeney for coming on the show. That was absolutely awesome getting to talk to him and all that. So I guess, guys, I guess I wanted to talk about that. The NL East, that was, of course, my final question.
Right.
I to kind of wrap up the show, I disagree. I am not high on the Mets this year.
I mean, I'm not as high as on them as I was last year.
Yeah.
But a thing he said about not so dark horse in the NL, Padres. I want to see how Bogarts affects the Padres because obviously Tatis is suspended. For
I think they're going to trade Tatis. I think they are.
Well, in this hypothetical scenario, we're just going to go off him not being moved.
That's insane.
If the Padres get to the to the end of Tatis' suspension, and are first in the NL West, and you're adding Fernando Tatis,
that's scary. Yeah.
Is
that would terrify me if I'm
that is very scary. Yeah. Instantly, they are the contender to win the NL, in my opinion.
Easily, yeah.
But so. Back to the NL East, I think. Sorry, Carson, the team to beat is the Philadelphia Phillies. With the addition of Trey Turner to the reigning NL champion, I mean, that team with Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, they have the perfect amount of power, defense, and speed, and pitching. Their pitching got better. I think they are the team to not only beat in the NL East, but I think they're the team to beat in the NL.
I don't think they're the team to beat in the NL because I agree with what you said at first. I think the Padres are the team to beat in the NL, and I think that's pretty easily.
Yes.
I think I do agree, though. I think that the Phillies are the favorite in the NL East, but that does not mean that the Braves aren't a better team necessarily, and that doesn't mean that the Braves aren't going to be a wild card because they are. I think three teams make it out of the playoffs in that division. I do. And I just think that the Phillies are just – I give the pitching advantage to the Braves, yes, but I give the overall lineup easily, I think, to the Phillies. They're also the reigning NL champions. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and say, hey, they're not gonna. They added too. It's not like they didn't lose people. They added Trey Turner, who's one of the best shortstops in baseball. He could play shortstop, third base, outfield. He could play wherever you need him to play. So I think that the Phillies got a lot better. The Braves got better too, but they didn't necessarily add a player like Trey Turner in order to get better. But again, they're the Braves. They're managed really well. Their GM is great. They are coached really well. Everything is good on the Braves, in my opinion. I just think that the Phillies are have a better roster than the Braves do, in my opinion. Overall roster than the Braves do.
I disagree.
We can go position by position at a later date, but if you go by position, every position ends up being better pretty much, except maybe outfield where Acuna plays, but that's it.
Okay, so are you going to say Philly's second base is better than Ozzie?
Okay, probably not, but that's about it. Probably outfield and second base. Congrats, their first baseman is better.
Bryce Harper is not better than Ronald Acuna.
I mean, okay, but their team still is overall better.
Yes, I agree
Matt
with
Olsen
you.
Matt Olsen is better than
Reese Hoskins. Okay, listen.
Your catcher
I think
is better
if
than
you
yours.
Go.
But that's okay. I'm gonna concede on that. It's J.T. Ramon.
If you go position by position, I think it's pretty even, but I don't know what it is, just the way the Phillies roster is constructed, their chemistry, just the way that they play baseball, I think they are the team to beat until Fernando Tatis is back.
Yeah, yeah.
Even maybe before
I do think that the Braves are going to be
close,
though.
Phillies and Padres, I think, are the 1 and 2 hand-in-hand.
Braves, hey.
I think Braves-Dodgers are 3 and 4 hand-in-hand.
The Braves are going to beat the Dodgers anyway. Don't worry about it.
Dodgers are just...
They're the biggest disappointment.
They're
in
sports. They're a laughing stock.
Yeah, they're literally.
They buy, and they can't compete.
They have like 10 top 10 or top 100 prospects.
They're like the best regular season team of all time, and then they hit October, and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What is this? I don't know October
baseball.
They have
like 7 top 100 prospects, too, which is insane.
But anyway, great show today, guys.
Yes.
It's great to have Sweeney on. I'm pumped. We'll try to get more guests going forward, and wrap it up.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Of course, I've been Carson Keel.
Luke Torrey.
Adam Baranowski.
And guys, we'll see you next week. Same time, same place. But until then, have a good night.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.